Ms. Smith, do you want to bring up Mary Fagan and Karen Eichhorn?
Thank you.
Chairman Shields and members of the committee, my name is Mary Fagan, and I'm an official court reporter in Marion County and appearing on behalf of the Oregon Court Reporters Association. Wanted to let you know. Thank you. The Oregon Court Reporters Association strongly supports and urges full funding of the Oregon Judicial Department budget so the future needs and the priorities of our judicial system can be met. I've been employed with the Judicial Department for the past 11 years of my 30-year career as a court reporter, and I experienced firsthand the budget cutbacks in 2002 and 2003 and the reduction of court services on many levels, and the impact was far-reaching in the communities. During this time, I also served as president and past president of the Oregon Court Reporters Association, and we dealt with the eventual loss of approximately 40 out of 50 official court reporter positions statewide. Oregon's courthouses now rely predominantly on electronic recording as the official record in court proceedings, and because of the many issues with surrounding audio recording and the integrity of the record and the appellate transcripts that flow from that, the Oregon Court Reporters Association strongly supports the Chief Justice's policy option package on putting certified stenographic reporters back in court, at least on the aggravated murder cases. This concept is also encompassed in Senate Bill 445 and supported by the Oregon Court Reporters Association. It was passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee and is currently in Ways and Means, and we did have the support of judges and the District Attorney's Office and Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Fagan. Any questions? Ms. Eichhorn?
Hello, Chairman Shields. I'm Karen Eichhorn. I was a former Multnomah County official court reporter. I lost my job in March of 2003 due to budget constraints. And since that time, I've been freelancing in the courthouse, and I report civil trials for civil trial attorneys who want to pay for the services of a court reporter because they're not really comfortable with the FTR recording or that. And so since then, I've been in the courthouse pretty much for the last 4 years reporting civil trials predominantly. And I just feel that the FTR, the digital recording, will never do the job of a live court reporter ever. And I really urge you to strongly support the Chief Justice's policy option package to bring certified shorthand reporters back into the courtroom for aggravated murder trials. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much. Good testimony. Appreciate
Thank
you coming.
Thank you.
Thanks. Should we just continue?
Yeah.
I think what we'll do is we'll just continue on with public testimony until our attendance improves. So I apologize that we don't have a full house, but I can guarantee you, particularly if you have some written testimony, that the other members will receive it. Could I please bring up Mark Comstock?
And Mr. Chair, I believe there's a handout at your desk from Mr. Comstock.
Chairman Shields, members of the committee, my name is Mark Comstock. I'm appearing today as a member of the Oregon State Bar in support of funding the Judicial Department at a level adequate to not only keep present services, but to increase judicial compensation, and also to fund the technology packages that are before you. I do have written testimony there. I'm going to shorten it a little bit. I think this is a time for the Ways and Means Committee, the legislature, to invest in the infrastructure of the courts, because we have unfortunately been not funding the courts at a level that has been adequate in the past few years. And that infrastructure that I'm talking about is judicial infrastructure. We want to have judicial compensation at a level that keeps experienced judges and brings the best and brightest to the bench. But also it is to fund technology. And when I've talked about court technology to other committees before, we're using essentially the same technology as when Oregon became a state. We're relying on paper records. What we need to move to is what the business world deals with, and that is electronic records. We've had the pleasure of testifying and seeing that House Bill 2357 did get passed, and that's a bill that comes out of the State Bar Task Force report that I've provided to you, and that is a survey of electronic filing in the state courts, similar to what the federal courts do. And that is a system that can be at least potentially partially funded by per page charges. We need to get into the 21st century in the court, and I urge this committee to make sure that funding for the courts is at a level where we have the resources to certainly deal with the public safety aspect, and I know that the co-chair's budget does fund more state police and corrections, but that has an impact on the courts, and the courts need to have funds for not only the criminal justice side, but the civil justice side. And that's where I practice. I practice commercial and business law, and we need to have the opportunities to have our disputes resolved in the court system. If we essentially end up having funding only for the criminal side of the court system, civil side will not be able to get their disputes to court, and that certainly will affect the business areas. So I want to certainly refer you to my written testimony and the task force report, and I urge you to increase the judicial department's budget to the level recommended by the governor, and that's the $329 million, certainly make sure that we have an adequate court system. Thank you.
That's great, Mr. Kamstock. You know, it might be helpful if you could help paint a picture for the committee from every day in your business law practice. Of what it means to business to have a judiciary that can quickly and effectively reconcile business disputes. Do you have any, could you paint us a picture of maybe an example of how being able to take care of that dispute in a timely fashion, perhaps one that could keep it from going to mediation or to some type of private entity, is basically how is that good for business?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll give you a couple of examples. One which I face probably once or twice a week, and that is I represent a lot of national entities, and I'll get a call from somebody in Florida or North Carolina or something, and they want to see a document from an Oregon court. And quite often they're used to seeing, being able to get via email a copy of a document, a judgment document. Well, in many examples, I'll be asked to get a court that happened last week. I was asked to get a copy of a judgment out of Wallowa County. Well, Wallowa County, at least from my office, is about an 8-hour drive. Now, I could certainly do that. I can pick up the phone also.
Good for your business.
Well, it could. It could be. I could pick up the phone and talk to the nice clerk over there, and she says, I'll be happy to send that. If you'd send me a check and the you know, description of the documents that you want. And for my practice, that means that that's a couple days over there. It's at least a day for them to pull the file and, you know, put it in the mail to me, and a couple days back. So my inquiry from the East Coast has now, instead of being able to get it in 5 minutes, it's now a week. The contrasting example is what I would do in the bankruptcy court or in the federal district court here in Oregon. I simply get on my desk computer. I'm able to dial up, look at the docket, get a PDF image of the record that I want, print it out, attach it to an email, and it's gone in 5 minutes. And then I've got somebody on the East Coast that's happy with me instead of waiting for a week. Now, the other types of issues, if you will, that I face in dealing with the court system is in timing. And I know that the courts have a constitutional mandate to try criminal cases first. And I try civil cases. Well, getting a case to trial is difficult sometimes in various counties. An example in our office last week was we had a case ready to go to trial. We show up, and in this particular county, they do not use individual calendaring, so we essentially would find out who our judge was the day of trial and put on our case. Well, the court at 3:30 in the afternoon the day before trial called us and said, "We don't have a judge for that trial." And that happened to be a four-day trial that had experts come in. Now, both sides of the bar at that point, the plaintiff's lawyer and the defense lawyer, they both have experts that they have to expend money to have those experts either get on a plane or be available, have their time blocked out, and that is an expense. When if we don't have the judicial resource to try the case, that's an expense, and then it gets kicked off to another time down the road, if you will, in timing. So I submit that those are two examples from practice that I think certainly could be helped by a adequate capacity and adequate technology and judicial resources for the courts. Those are just a couple that I would say address that.
Right, off the top of your head. And feel free, if you think of others, if you want to email them or send us to the committee, I think painting that kind of picture for us is helpful.
Appreciate it.
We really appreciate you coming down to testify.
Thank you.
Any questions for this one? Thank you, Mr. Kamstack.
Thank you.
I'll bring up Karen Nibbler. Welcome back to the committee. Ready
Thank
when you,
you
are.
Karen Nibbler. I represent League of Women Voters of Oregon. And I submitted a study on the Oregon judiciary that we had done, submitted it the first day. And I'm here to just make some observations from that report. In our study process, we do some investigating and questioning and interviewing first. Then we write it up and send it to all of our members, and we have a process that we call consensus where they meet and talk over the report, and then we draw some conclusions and make a position and then use that position to come and testify and advocate. So we haven't finished that process yet, so I can't make recommendations at this point. In general, we support adequate funding of government agencies. So I can say, you know, that we're in support of adequate funding for the Judicial Department just as part of that position. But I can't make recommendations over particular parts of their budget. But I can make some observations of the things that we reported in the study. And it was a great process to be able to go out and interview all of the judges in the different districts, even way out in eastern Oregon. And we got different impressions by talking to the judges in outlying areas and in big cities. And also it was interesting to visit the courthouses and the courthouse facilities. And it was quite obvious from the visits that some of the courthouses were quite inadequate in size. Some of them were fairly old, and they were in need of renovation. And there's one in the state that won't survive an earthquake, and everybody's aware of that. The one thing that we were impressed by is that there's a lot of technology in the courtrooms these days, and a lot of the pictures that we have from the inside of the courtrooms, there's, you know, they're kind of cluttered with all of the technology, and there's cords hanging everywhere that people are tripping over, and so somehow or another, you know, they need to set it up better so it's not so inconvenient for the court staff and maybe for the public. The other thing that we heard as we made interviews with the staff was that most of them were short-staffed, that additional judges were needed and additional court staff were needed in most of the districts, especially those that were growing very quickly. And in some of the outlying districts, they also needed more judicial time just because of distances and travel. And that was one of the factors that we noticed. And in all judicial districts, the judges have to balance the time deadlines that they have for criminal cases and juvenile dependency cases. And these are usually so demanding that it's hard to get the civil cases in the docket. And, I think that's what the previous person was talking about. Also, in family court, a lot of litigants come in without attorneys, and so it's very time-consuming for the court staff to help people fill out paperwork, and it's time-consuming for judges when they have to deal with people that don't have attorneys. One of our definite observations was that most of the districts were in need of more staff. The other thing that was also talked about in interviews was that competitive salaries were an issue. Especially in some of the bigger districts and larger communities, that because of where they were, the salaries outside of the courthouse were sometimes drawing court staff away into other jobs, and they had difficulty retaining their staff. Also, judicial salaries were stagnant, and that was an impediment for getting attorneys to consider the judicial career. That was stated by several people. And the specialty courts, people were very enthusiastic about. It was a good tool and had good outcomes, but it also took a lot of staff time and judge time, and that needs additional staff time. The other thing that we've observed is that the current recommended budget is less than adequate, and there were no enhancements that have been recommended at this time, so that's just an observation we can make. Are there any questions?
That's been made by others as well.
Right. So are there any questions that you have from the report that we submitted earlier?
Thank you, Ms. Nibbler.
Okay,
appreciate it.
Thank you for letting us come.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and bring up Ms. Hutchinson.
Good
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Neva Hutchinson. I live at 3105 Evergreen Avenue Northeast in Salem, Oregon. I'm here as a member of the Marion County Citizen Review Board to recommend that you look favorably on the $359.6 million budget proposed by our Chief Justice. The Citizen Review Board, or CRB, is charged with reviewing cases of children and youth who are in substitute care. I've been on one of the Marion County boards for about 2.5 years. In that period of time, I've seen us go from 10 boards to 12 boards. Each month, we review anywhere between 8 and 12 cases, always with a minimum of 12 children, sometimes as many as 40 children. By the time we see that case, it's been in the system for 6 months, and it's been before our judges for an initial jurisdictional hearing. There has been a petition filed, sometimes a variety of other things before we see it. In 2006, there were 5,653 dependency petitions filed in the state of Oregon. A little over 1,700 of those moved on to termination of parental rights. In each case, this means that there was a shelter hearing to accept jurisdiction, a dependency hearing, and there will be permanency hearings to establish a final outcome for these kids. In between, there will be a variety of other court appearances, including establishing legal parentage, and in some families this will include 4 or 5 fathers, 1 mother, and a variety of children. There's criminal issues depending on why the children come into care, and an ongoing examination of whether parents are doing the things that are required by the courts to be able to get their children back. As the number and the complexity of cases grow, DHS has been able to add workers, CRBs have been able to add boards, but unfortunately we have not been able to add enough judges to meet the needs, pretty much based on a high burnout rate and the competitive level of salaries in the states around us. Because of the pandemic of meth in the state of Oregon, we're seeing more and more children coming into the system. Many of them are born with meth in their systems. At one recent CRB review, we had 10 cases. 8 of them involved parents on methamphetamines, and of those 8, 4 of them had children taken at the hospital because they were born with methamphetamines in their system. The Federal Adoption and Safe Families Act added many new responsibilities and requirements for courts and CRBs to follow. For example, ASPA requires that if a child is in substitute care for 15 of 22 months, then a TPR must be filed unless there is compelling reason not to do so. Even though recommendations are made by the CRB to various state and governmental agencies, including school districts, DHS, and a variety of other folks, the final responsibility for these children lies with our judges. Now more than ever, it is important to have judges who are experienced and who can follow a case in a timely and involved manner. For many parents, the decision to change their lives and care for their children comes when they finally face a judge and have to be responsible for their actions. Sadly, the burnout rate of judges is increasing, and the ability to attract more judges from the ranks of our most experienced lawyers becomes more and more difficult all the time. As a citizenry, we want our judges involved in our community. Their effectiveness quite often is in direct correlation to their knowledge about their community and about the resources and limitations they find in their community. In general, our judges are caring, compassionate people who want to see the best for children and for families. But given the number of cases they must adjudicate on a daily basis, it's almost impossible to give the attention each case needs. Time and again, voters list crime as one of their number one issues of Oregon. They support causes to stop child abuse, to prevent spread of drug use in our community. Our citizens complain about the length of time between arrest and a trial. In the case of children, these lags can be devastating. For a child, a year is a very long time to have to wait to find out who their forever family might be. We need to modernize our court system, assure that every technological tool is available to streamline the process, and value our judges by compensating them in a manner that assures their tenure and we attract the very best. I urge you to seriously consider the needs of our judicial system, both in manpower and infrastructure, and support the budget supported by our Chief Justice.
Good testimony. Thank you very much, Ms. Hutchinson. Any questions?
Thank you
very much. Okay, colleagues, since the Chief Justice has to leave at 4, unfortunately, that's for another commitment, an important one. And so we're going to try to get through the policy option packages as quickly as possible to allow him to provide some concluding remarks. So do you want to come forward?
They're going to go forward, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thank you, and I've made a call to see if I can extend my stay here.
Oh, wonderful, and I apologize for the shuffling of the agenda.
Good morning, or good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Sarah Gates, and we're going to try and depart the text a little bit and get through this and give you the abbreviated version of our policy option packages. I'd like to start for just a minute with the technology package. That is clearly a very important package to us. And so I'd like to let our CIO, Bud Borgia, talk to you for a few minutes. And I do have answers to the questions that were raised yesterday regarding what are the debt service costs and some information about how does that impact our future resource needs and how will that change our business. So I'll get to that after Bud talks. I did want to point out some materials that are in front of you. You have a spreadsheet that is we will be using as we walk through the policy option packages. In response to Senator Winter's request for more detailed numbers, I put this together thinking it might aid the discussion, especially in light of the short time. You also have a response to some other questions that were raised in earlier meetings, and you have a memo that I sent to Robin Lamont earlier this year related to the mandated caseload issue that she handed out yesterday. So with that, I'll turn it over to Bud.
Good afternoon, Chairman Shields and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bud Borgia, and I am the new Chief Information Officer for the Oregon Judicial Department. I've been in Oregon and with the department for just over 1 month now, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. For the past month, I have been traveling the state of Oregon to visit our customers, the local courts. I wanted an opportunity to understand and see how they operate. The diversity between the court rivals the geographical diversity that I've seen throughout the state of Oregon. In eastern Oregon, courts have a completely different business need than the courts on the coast or in the valley. Eastern Oregon courts really rely heavily on video conferencing. Their focus is based on their geographical location versus some of the other ones where they're closer. For example, Grant and Harney County share a judge. It is about a 1.5 hour drive each way between those courthouses. And when there is a need for an arraignment or a court case, a judge would have to drive 1.5 hours to get from one location to the other. Typically, a case file has to be delivered the night before, or the judge only has a few minutes to review it before he gets there, depending on his time. So it is not uncommon for them to have the judge, the defendant, and a witness all on video conferencing at the same time, and the only ones in the courthouse are the lawyers because of their location. So there is a need on how they use technology different than how it's done in the valley where people are closer together. The physical courthouses range from modern due to a natural disaster to an old hospital that has been retrofitted to a courthouse. Others are historical buildings and can't be modified. As we move towards implementing an e-court solution, we have to keep in mind these physical limitations that we're going to need to overcome, especially with power limitations and the need for high-speed access. In Jefferson County, they have very poor heating and cooling systems, so everyone has a space heater and a fan on their desk. And depending on the season, if they all turn on that, they're either their heater or their fan, every computer reboots in the office. And that's how they operate today. The uniqueness and ingenuity of the courts is amazing. They're the ones dealing with the real customer, the citizens of Oregon. They're the ones in the trenches using our outdated systems day in and day out. Each and every one uses the current systems differently. They needed to find ways to manipulate our current system in order to meet their unique needs. Their day-to-day processes are very labor-intensive and rely heavily on paper. The systems are not intuitive or user-friendly. They rely on codes to be used in the system that have no intuitive meaning, that mean different things to different courts. In fact, They have two different systems that they use. Some processes can only be entered in one system, some in another, and worse, some have to be started in one system and finished in another system. This makes it very hard to have somebody come in and be productive right away. There are some common things that all the courts face, and that's their physical space limitations. They are running out of room for their case files. The ability to scan and create an electronic document is something that all the courts need as soon as possible. One court could not wait for us to be able to move down this path and took it on themselves to create a scanning process. By the end of this summer, they will have scanned in almost 1 million documents in order to free up space. This has also allowed them to operate a little bit more efficiently. A judge, while he's on the bench, can request a copy of a document or a case file and have it emailed to him while he's on the bench and see what he's missing, versus today, they typically would have to stop court, have somebody go look for the file, assuming it's filed properly and not on someone else's desk, and bring it back and then restart the case. We've also seen the natural and man-made disasters that can happen. We had Val Paulson, the trial court administrator for Klamath Falls, Lakeview, here yesterday, talk about an earthquake. I talked briefly about Jefferson County in Madras, where they have the inadequate power. In Malheur County, all their court records are kept in the basement because they're out of space. Well, they've had a flood, and the whole bottom shelf got wet, all those case files. They had to lay them all out and bring in hair dryers to dry out those files because those are their records. The strategic technology plan and the chief's vision brings our outdated systems not only to today's standards, but thinks past today and where we need to be in the future so we can provide vital services for future generations. His vision and passion were some of the reasons that I wanted to be part of this new era and move across country to Oregon. One of the key reasons that this will be a successful project is the buy-in by the business unit. This is not a technology-driven project. There's a real business need, and the business units have taken ownership of this project. Judge Murphy, who you heard yesterday, is the chair of the technology committee. The Chief Justice and State Court Administrator are the business sponsors, and as we move forward, we'll have outside quality assurance, quality of control, reporting directly to them. The private sector has raised the bar on what the public expects for organizations that provide service. Companies like Amazon and eBay have changed the expectations of when people can get service. Today, if you want to go to a courthouse, you have to work around business hours of 9 to 4:30. You arrive at the courthouse, you look for a place to park. The only place available is potentially a parking garage that charges you $10 regardless of how long you're staying. You stand in line to get through an understaffed security screening and x-ray process. You look for the room you want to go to. You stand in a line to put in a request. You stand in another line to pay. You stand in a third line in order to receive the documents that you're requesting. This process is no longer acceptable. In my past experience in both the public and private sector, I have worked with designing and implementing strategic plans that move forward businesses in this type of an endeavor. We are embarking on a fundamental change that rivals the difference between the Flintstones and the Jetsons. This is a large technology change, but more importantly, it's an even larger business process change. As I mentioned earlier, each court is unique, and they have different requirements. The technology needed must be able to support a common system framework, yet flexible enough to support the individual uniqueness of the courts. The technology used to develop our current system has been in use for the past 25 years. However, this technology is no longer taught in schools, and the people skilled in this technology are reaching the age of retirement across the country. We need to act now in order to be ready to move. One of the keys to success is to develop a strategic partnership right from the beginning. I've met with the Department of Corrections and the State Police to start these discussions. The data we collect is used throughout state agencies, local units of government, justice partners, public safety entities, private sector businesses, and the public. We need to make sure we understand how other people use our data and make it available to those who need it. An example of how we did not do this in the past is judges are taught to sentence in months. And throughout their sentencing process, they can do things like leniency by using half months. Our system is designed to accept a sentence in weeks. The Department of Corrections accepts a sentence in days. So it is up to individuals to do the conversion from months to days, months to weeks to days, and that's not always consistent. So this is an example of how we need to work together with our partners to make sure we're passing the right information back and forth. So with your approval, we would like to start tactical solutions that lay the foundation for the future vision in this budget cycle. So now I ask, I'd like to open it up for questions then.
And you have the slides in your binder starting on page 104. You have the strategic IT plan. It lays out all the different pieces of it, and you've heard mentioned to e-filing and content management and a new case and financial management and what that will all do. So rather than spending copious amounts of time, I would like to just address the question about debt service. I talked with the experts in the Department of Administrative Services this morning and said, so how much debt service are we talking about? And when you're looking at around a $100 million project, it'll cost us around $90 million in debt service over the life of the debt service payments. And it's a five-year payback, and so over the next 10 years, you'd be paying that much in debt service. On response to the question about, you know, how will that change our resources? Will we need fewer resources? What will that do? It's going to change the look of our IT shop. We are not going to be programmers. We are going to be using vendors to help to build these systems. We're going to be integrating them and analyzing the data and supporting our courts. We're going to use the people in our courts differently. So there's going to be a shift of where we're spending our money now to where it will be needed to be spent in the future. We're not going to say, we don't think we're going to need less people. We're going to need different people doing different things. And we anticipate that some of the efficiencies we are going to gain will help us mitigate the need for more staff in the future, that we won't have to grow as fast in the future because we'll be able to do things with technology. Are there any specific questions about this package that we can answer before we start scooting through the other ones?
Real quickly on technology, package 103, mm-hmm. ACMS, what does that stand for?
That is the Appellate Case Management System, which you heard referenced by the Chief Justice and Judge Brewer. This is to complete that package.
Right.
Or that project.
Good. So we're completed with the policy
action. There are no more questions on that package.
Questions?
Okay, what I'd like to do is, rather than diving into the binder, I'd like you to take your handy-dandy sheet here. And I'm going to talk you through really quickly.
Just one second. Chief Justice, how are we looking on yours? Okay. Okay, great. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so if you look to the first page of that handout, we've already talked through Package 101, the judicial compensation, and we've talked about Package 104, the specialty courts continue. That's the drug courts and treatment courts. Package 107 we touched on briefly. There are numerous components to that package. You found it?
Got it, yes.
Okay. And as you can see in lines 4 through 11 of there, this includes a lot of the program-related ideas that we're trying to enhance. We have new positions for Juvenile Court Improvement Project. That's a federally funded project. Verification has to do with the verification of indigency so that they can get court-appointed counsel. You'll see line 6 has been crossed out. We at a Secretary of State audit recommend that we could try full verification in this, and we did a pilot project, and it did not turn out to be cost-effective, so we're withdrawing that portion of our request. You have a report in your binder that walks through all of that. We have positions for the Citizens Review Board to support performance measurement. That's an area where we have cobbled together staff, and we have no permanent full-time staff dedicated to it. We're asking for staff to do that. We have mediation program enhancement and support, and then the Lane County Child Care, which you heard about several days ago. I have Leola McKenzie here, who is familiar with many of these pieces of this package. If you have any specific questions, you have lots of details in your binder once again. Okay?
Thank you.
Package 108 is the new judgeships. You've heard talk about that yesterday.
Package 109 is the package for real-time reporting in death penalty cases, which you heard the court reporters reference earlier in this hearing. This is for a pilot project to do daily transcripts in those cases. Package 110 is for an interpreter rate increase. They have not had an increase in their hourly rate in 10 years. This package would catch them up just for the increase in inflation since their last raise. We're having trouble retaining experienced interpreters, and this is one area where we need to pay them more so they do not go to the private sector. This package also has a component for translation of forms into more languages. One of the problems we have is with the resources that we have in the department, it takes sometimes up to 6 months to translate forms into all the languages that we need them translated into to reflect changes in the law. So we would like to have additional funds to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Winters.
Thank you. What is the current rate?
I will let Leola McKenzie answer that question.
Senator Winters, members of the committee, the current rate, for the record, my name is Leola McKenzie with the State Court Administrator's Office. The current rate is $32.50 per hour for certified interpreters, and that's the same rate that's been in place since our certification program was established 10 years ago.
And are all of them certified, or do you have none certified as well?
Senator Winters, members of the committee, there are approximately 100 certified interpreters in the Spanish language in Oregon, another 10 certified, a couple in Vietnamese, and the rest in Russian. And then we do have a number of other interpreters who are not paid the certified rate in a variety of other languages.
And what are those rates?
Non-certified interpreters make $25 an hour.
Please continue.
Package 105 is related to court facilities. Now, originally we had a placeholder package here for the Courthouse Facilities Task Force, but there is separate legislation that is working those recommendations through the legislative process, so the component that you see on line 17 will be no longer needed. And so that you don't, at the very end of this document, it talks about all the adjustments, so I'll make sure you understand those in a couple of minutes. But the bottom part of that package is to deal with maintenance in the Supreme Court. We need to develop a long-term maintenance strategy for this historic building and address deferred maintenance needs. And we also have furnishing needs in the local courts. We have furnishings that are falling apart. We need file storage until we can get to electronic content management. We need the high-density filing space, that sort of thing. There are details, once again, in your binder. On the next page, if you'll turn the page, is Package 106, which is for court security. There's two components to this package. One is to provide us with expenditure limitation, other funds expenditure limitation, for the state court security account, which was established last session. We were only given a small amount of expenditure limitation at that time. We came back to the emergency board last November and received an additional amount of expenditure limitation, so therefore we need to now request it again for the upcoming biennia. There is a report behind tab 8 in your binder that discusses what we're going to be doing with this money. It is to initially work on the security for the courts here in Salem, the appellate courts and the state court administrator's office, and then it will be used at the circuit court level and then at the justice and muni court level. The other component is to address some local security needs where the local court security accounts are not sufficient. All the courts have issues here, but we are trying to address a few of them in this budget package. Finally, Package 103 is the technology package. We've talked about the various pieces. The infrastructure is to develop the infrastructure we need statewide, our network, and computer systems, so that we can move into the modern environment. Imaging support is to start the process of scanning those documents that are residing in our courthouses. We have millions of them. ACMS, I mentioned a few minutes ago. E-court is what Bud was talking about, and you've heard reference throughout our presentations. And disaster recovery is clearly that. It's to have a contract for that. So all, and then finally, Package 102, we're withdrawing because we're included in the statewide salary pot. At the very bottom of the page, you'll see all the adjustments that we are requesting to be made to these packages for a variety of reasons. They are all detailed in your budget presentation binder, and I've mentioned several of them. We've just had changes in what is needed since we built the budget last August.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question about imaging support, which is scanning. Is that retrospectively scanning documents, or is that day forward documents that you work with now?
Chair Shields, Representative Nathanson. At the moment, each court is doing it a little differently. Some courts are starting with the older files and moving forward. Other courts are doing the more modern cases.
Active cases,
thank you. We have yet to set a policy on how, when we roll into using electronic content management, what if we're going to just day forward or not. So I can get back to you with what those two courts specifically plan to do, but I do know that it's Multnomah and Clackamas predominantly that we're trying to get caught up. So I can get you that answer very quickly.
Hello.
I would like some more information.
Sure.
And what kind of policy you envision. For me, it relates to, again, without all the money in the world, how do we spend the money in the best way possible? Which documents are likely to be needed and used? And so where is the imaging most important first if we can't get it all done?
Chair Shields, Representative Nathan, you make a very good point, and that is part of what we are looking at as we're moving forward with this. What are the ones that we want to move forward into the new system? Which ones are going to be used the most?
Thank you.
And then any other questions before I let the chief finish up?
No, I think that's it. Thank you very much for your work on this presentation.
I think we got through it.
Yes. Well done. Mr. Chief Justice, would you like to come forward for concluding remarks?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, my name is Paul DeMunis, Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. I'd like to begin the end of this where I began at the beginning, and that is to say thank you to each of you for the courtesy you've extended during this legislative session, to the Office of Chief Justice, and to me personally. I also want to thank each of you for the questions that you have asked the staff and the public members who have presented testimony here. Your engagement in this process is reassuring to me. Watching you do that and answering some of your questions myself demonstrated to me that each of you shares the same commitment that I do and feels the same form of sacred trust that we owe to the public to make sure that we today create in all three branches of government, a government that's transparent, competent, efficient, and fair. And so it is very reassuring to me to watch as you have applied yourself to determining what is the best budget we can do for the judicial branch. In 1835, Alexis de Tocqueville authored a book called Democracy in America. And I won't paraphrase this, I'll paraphrase it. This quote won't be direct, but de Tocqueville said in 1835, these Americans are curious people. They turn every political, and then I would put in brackets, economic and social issue into a judicial one. And I ask you today if that's not true. Is it not true that every political, economic, and social issue in our state and throughout this land is at some time or other turned into a judicial question? In other words, it lands in our courthouses in front of our judges. That's the reality of the system that we're in. I believe that all of us here share the same commitment to preserve for our children and our grandchildren an Oregon governmental system that meets the needs of the public and assures that in the future we'll meet those needs. I began by saying to you that judicial power is one of the cornerstones of democracy, but our branch of government has no authority to fund our own operations. For that, we must rely on your branch of government. And I think you have heard throughout the days that we have been here that it will be your choice, you will decide what kind of judicial system we will have. You will decide whether we have a judicial system that uses technology to protect the public, to protect individual rights, to see that that finite calculation about human behavior is best served by that mix of punitive sanctions and reformative programs. Your choices will dictate whether we're able to do that for society. Your choices will decide whether we use technology to collect every cent that's owed by offenders, by anyone who owes money to the judicial system, to make sure that victims are fully restored, and to make sure that we help to fund our own operations. You've heard something about an e-court, and Mr. Comstock made some reference to it, and I might say, just as an aside, Oregon is a small place, and I had the great privilege of practicing law with Mark Comstock for 13 years, so it's wonderful to see him up here representing the judicial branch of government. I taught him everything he knows. No, I'm just kidding. he would disagree with that. but what he made reference to, and when he was asked by one of those very pertinent questions, he was explaining that what my vision and the vision of Kingsley Click, the state court administrator, and Sarah Gates, and those other, all the other people who work so hard and are so committed to the judicial system, is to create the largest courthouse in the state, the e-courthouse, where if you get on your vacation and you get a traffic ticket in Burns or one of those open spaces like I've done, that at 10 o'clock at night, you can go online and you can pay your ticket. That's what the public expects, and that's where we need to go. In the end, our constitutional democracy works because the other branches of government and the public acquiesce to judicial power. They acquiesce to judicial power because for over 200 years, legislatures, governors, the public, and judges have built the public's trust in the judicial system. That confidence in our impartiality, our competency, and our fairness is not self-actuating. It has to, it exists and has to be built by the cooperation of all three branches of government. And indeed, our own economic prosperity depends in no small measure on your branch of government creating a strong, accountable, effective judicial system that maintains the public confidence. I would like to make one aside that I think illustrates my point. For the last 5 years, I've had the privilege of advising the Russian government about judicial matters in Russia. I've spent a great deal of time working there. Russia is the largest country in the world. It has more natural resources than any country in the world. It has one-third of the world's natural gas. It has 25% of the world's oil. Last month, it passed Saudi Arabia as the world's largest producer of oil. Yet its free market economy flounders. In the Russian Far East, the taiga, the forest, is as far as the eye can see. Our companies in Oregon, our forest products companies, would love to go into that country to harvest timber, to create mills, to boost their economy. They can't and they won't because international investment, domestic business, and the public do not trust the courts. They do not trust the courts to enforce economic and property rights fairly, competently, and efficiently. What I'm asking you to do is create a judicial budget that continues to preserve for the public that confidence that no matter who you are, no matter the color of your skin, no matter the economic or social circumstances that you've been born into, that you can go to the courthouse, that the courthouse stands for justice for everyone, everywhere, that you, that's the one place that you can go and have whatever issue it is adjudicated fairly and impartially without political pressure. That's the kind of budget we need to build. I started by asking you, as a co-equal branch of government, to continue to strengthen the partnership between our branches of government. We, with limited resources, we have been combining the legislative, local government, and the judicial branches to create innovative programs that work. And I'm asking you through this budget, I'm asking you to give us that opportunity and to strengthen our partnership. I would like to set for the record three things. These are our priorities. We need to increase judicial salaries because we need to attract and retain the best and the brightest from the legal profession. We need to embark on technological advancements so that we can bring our court system into the 21st century. And we need a budget that will give us enough money to meet the increased staffing needs that are bound to arise and that we know will arise from the enactment of new laws, from the changes in our society. I look forward to working with each of you in attempting to build that budget. So I'll end where I started. Thank you again for the wonderful courtesy you have shown the Office of Chief Justice and to me personally. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Questions? Well, I think I can say on behalf of the entire committee that we appreciate your testimony and we appreciate the courtesy that you've afforded to us, and we look forward to working with you to enhancing the judicial branch through this budget process. Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.